Welcome to CRE Tech Talks. This podcast series is brought to you by Building Engines, providing web and mobile property management software to innovative commercial real estate owners, managers, and the clients they serve for over 14 years. And now, please join our host, the man with more hot air than the MetLife blimp, Building Engines Senior Vice President, Scott Sidman.
Thank you again for that warm introduction, and welcome to this episode of CRE Tech Talks podcast. Again, I'm your host, Scott Sidman. Today's discussion focuses on the keys for a speedy and successful technology implementation. So most of the conversations and content that I see about CRE technology, and certainly what's usually found here and in other content that we produce, tends to focus on the providers and the technology itself, as well as the problems we're trying to solve. But we hardly spend any time discussing, I think, what's ultimately most important, and that's using and realizing value from what you buy, or in the case of our types of technology, license these days. Fortunately, our guest today is especially well-suited to discussing the keys to successful deployments and a host of related topics. Bill Greenhouse is a principal at Redirect Consulting and an expert in large-scale and complex software deployments. Welcome, Bill, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Great. Well, let's jump right in. Let's have you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in both commercial real estate and consulting. And then, as you know from having listened to one of our podcasts, we also like to have our guests share something kind of unique and unusual about themselves and our background. So let's hear what you have to say.
Okay. Well, I started in commercial real estate in 1985 when I took a job at a major New York commercial real estate firm. I guess, interestingly, it was probably among the very few real estate companies that was making any commitment to technology at that time, beyond, I guess, word processing. And in fact, I think I introduced word processing when I got there. So that was a really terrific place to be to learn commercial real estate. They really covered all aspects of it. They had a full-service brokerage, as well as third-party property management. Many owned commercial properties, and they took care of everything pretty much in-house. So I got to learn the business from pretty much every side. And I ran IT there for about 10 years. And towards the end of that tenure, we found ourselves in a position of having to select and implement a new property management accounting system. And we had to do it in a very tight time frame. So I became the internal project manager for that project. It was an incredible learning experience, and it felt very high stakes. It was very long hours, but I guess I had an epiphany of sorts. I decided that there was a real need for technical consulting in that area for that particular software, in fact. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anybody else around that was doing that, so I went out and did that, and that's pretty much how I got my...
Great. So you created, saw an opportunity in a niche and took advantage of it. The classic startup story.
Right.
Exactly. And then anything else, anything on the your background that you'd like to share with us? Yeah. Unique or unusual?
Let's see. I guess it's kind of corny, but I'm coming up on my 27th year of marriage to a woman that I met in the first grade. I think it's kind of unusual.
That's a great story right there.
And, you know, since I'm only 30, obviously we got married in the third grade.
Well, clearly didn't happen in New York, but we won't delve too much into that. So terrific. So great, strong real estate background in New York, which is, you know, in terms of real estate and, you know, kind of the crucible of where things happen, terrific background and story. So tell us a little bit about Redirect and the services you provide for your clients and how long you've been doing this.
How much time did you say we had? I can talk. So I founded Redirect with a couple of my partners in 1999. So I had been doing consulting as a sole proprietor for a few years, and the demand for those services, kept growing, and the types and size and complexity of the projects that I was being asked to participate in also grew. And so it became clear that I couldn't take that business as a sole proprietor. So we formed Redirect, and our original sort of core offerings at that time are still a big part of our business. Software selection, implementation, data conversion was a specialty, customization of software, and certainly integrations, making different packages work together and exchange information. And from there, our portfolio of service has continued to expand, particularly as we grew around and as the projects grew around project management and process improvement. And now real estate investment management is a big area for us. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, we created a help desk offering, and now that supports over 2,000 seats.
Wow.
Internal resources that a lot of companies are not bringing in anymore. So it's really more of a dedicated, tailored support offering that really has been indispensable for our clients. And then I just wanted to also mention that one of the most exciting things that happened just this year is we've branched out, now opened a San Francisco office to support the Western region. Really, really exciting for us.
I saw that. That's terrific. And how many people are in the firm right now? How many?
We are hiring. So I usually have to count them out and figure out how many there are, but I think we're about 25.
Great. I think that's terrific growth and speaks to something we've been talking about a lot recently, which is, the increasing reliance of commercial real estate firms on technology and the need for services like those that you provide. So it's a great growth story. So let's jump into the meat of this a little bit and start out by talking in some broad terms about, I guess, let's talk about the things that people do wrong to begin with and some of the classic mistakes you see companies make, maybe that you're called in to try and fix, mm-hmm. Or that you're aware of when they make a decision to, again, purchase or license some new technology and then begin the deployment process. Where do people get off on the wrong foot?
Well, I guess it might sound a little self-serving, but I think one of the big mistakes companies make is to not bring in a consultant when they get started in the process. Some companies go into this thinking they can do it themselves. They're experts in their business and in real estate. They're not experts in the business of deploying technology. And usually we find if they think that they can kind of do it on their own, that they really don't understand what's involved. But beyond that, I think one of the mistakes we see a lot is that there isn't sufficient buy-in from the top. I think that in order for a project to really proceed from start to finish efficiently and thoroughly, you need to have somebody at the top who understands the need and is making it happen. The other thing that happens is, the expectations have to be properly set, of course. It goes along, I guess, with having a consultant. If you don't fully understand what's involved in the process and don't plan for the amount of time and commitment that it's going to take, internal resources in the business, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so very often we find that there's a tendency to bring in, a project team without backfilling their roles at the regular day job internally or just not, providing sufficient resources. As a consultant, we can bring in all the resources in the world, but without that internal component, they're not going to get a good implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess one other thing that comes to mind is that, a lot of times people will try to bring in new software without really making the process changes that are required to work with the new software. They want to do things the way they've always done.
Mm-hmm.
They want to grasp onto the status quo. They don't want to let outsiders lead the change. Once they understand that they can fully leverage the new system by optimizing that process and that workflow, things tend to go much better.
Right. And I think it's closely connected to the first point you made, which is the buy-in from the top. And I would assume then the implication there is that if there's not that buy-in, sort of the end users or the people who, you know, you rely on to get the deployment done, they just find reasons to avoid it or you know, delay the implementation. Is that kind of the result of that?
That could happen. What happens a lot is, you know, you have folks who are at a sort of mid-level, end users or middle management, who are really committed to the project, really anticipating the benefits. But if the top doesn't have that same vision, they're going to be changing priorities. They're not going to allow this to happen because they're going to have higher priorities. They're going to pull people away. They're going to say, sure. Okay, yeah, I know you're working on this project, but I've got this right now.
Makes sense. I think one of the things we always get asked when we begin a project in deploying of our application is how people ask, how long will it take? And how do you answer something like that?
Well, it's obviously it's not a one-word answer. It's a difficult question because
right.
There's so many variables that go into that. And usually until we get a certain amount of discovery done in the project, we won't have a good answer for that. It depends, obviously, on the complexity of the project, what software they're implementing, how much of that software they're planning to implement, what software they're coming off of. All those things are factors.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's the resource allocation. How much commitment are they making to putting internal resources on the project? And, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all all-hour. You know, our projects and any well properly done implementation will be tailored specifically to the individual needs of that company. It's something that we can certainly answer once we get a feel for the project and the company
client. Right.
But it's going to be somewhere in the range of 4 to 18 months. So it could be a very wide range. Another thing that people don't often take into consideration very much, it's a very, very important factor, is the business personality. Each business has, you know, a different culture, different personality.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies like to spend a lot of time discussing each point. They'll have multiple meetings, bringing in, stakeholders from all areas of the company. Things go a little slower. I think it's a valid way to go, and sometimes it's the best way to go, but it's going to mean a longer timetable.
Right. And I think just to clarify a little bit or provide some context for the audience, a lot of your implementations and deployments are focused on complex systems like accounting platforms, Yardi, MRI, for example, those things that involve heavy lifting.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, of course, we have, you know, our implementation methodology is flexible. It's very, very scalable. And that's exactly what I was thinking of, a full sort of core mission-critical software platform. We do other types of implementations much more quickly.
And what, if you could kind of give us a roadmap a little bit of the major steps or stages in an implementation, could you break down the process a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, the beginning, the first part, as I kind of mentioned, in the previous question is we have to gather the requirements. Sometimes that means a separate, discrete discovery project where we really take a deep dive into all areas of the business, really get under the hood and see what's going on. But if we don't do that, if we launch right into the implementation without a full discovery, there will still have to be a very detailed requirements gathering period in order to know what we're dealing with, what we're implementing, what the priorities are, what the, you know, what the specific challenges are going to be. Again, there's no cookie cutter implementation, and these platforms are complex, and each implementation is unique. So once we have a good set of requirements, then we can really do the detailed planning and put together a project team and plan. We can do a risk assessment, a proper roadmap for the project.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would get into design. Design is a process where we take the client through what the software can do, what needs to be decided, what options need to be selected, what design elements are involved, hierarchies of entities, things like that, coding conventions. And also, design involves those things that need to be tailored for their business. If there's customizations that they need to accommodate something they're doing. Those things are all planned out, designed in that phase. After that, we have what we call build phase, and that's where we actually take that information, that design that's been worked out in the design phase, and build it, get the system up and running with that configured the way we designed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then critically, after the build phase, we do what we call it a pilot phase. It's where we do the testing, or where the client does the testing, and that's really, really, really important. I guess it goes without saying, but you don't really see what you designed until you get the opportunity to pilot it.
Right.
And, you know, that's when it's no longer abstract, and you have to really take the system to its paces to make sure that, A, what's been built conforms to the design that we put down, and also that design and those decisions were the correct ones. Once we have a good pilot, successfully pilot all the, you know, all the processes that need to be piloted in order to be comfortable that you will be able to run the business. Then we get into deployment. And the deployment phase is where we actually, if there's a data conversion, we will do the final data, take the final cut of data from the old system, convert it, do the data validation, train the users, and then plan, you know, how that would actually roll out. Rolling out the deployment involves getting people trained and getting started.
Right.
And that's it. You know, we go live, and then we build into the plan a stabilization period because it's going to be difficult. No matter how thorough and well done the implementation is, there's going to be a difficult few weeks when people start to adjust to the new platform.
Right. That makes sense. It sounds like a really well organized and systematic process. My assumption is that if you follow these stages correctly, you get the right kind of level of engagement, that the ultimate result is you get the utilization you're hoping for, and that's the key to everything, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah. Both in terms of, you know, adopting the system the way it was designed and intended, and how well utilized the system itself is. You know, are you taking the best advantage of what the system offers? And very often, you know, we limit that first implementation, what we would call phase one, to simply replacing the functionality of the previous system. In other words, get them back to their baseline with the new system, which usually means they're already going to gain quite a bit because they're on a legacy system that doesn't have all the inherent features of the new system, and so they'll see tremendous benefits right off the bat. Mm-hmm. But some of the more advanced features that they maybe cause them to select that system, we would hold off on that till the second phase.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of change all at once. So,
right. So you mentioned earlier about the importance of executive buy-in. That kind of relates to my next question and something you talked about as well in terms of the project team. Obviously, on the client side of this, their biggest challenge is always time and getting resources and mind share and attention. What do you require of people on the client side, and how do you mitigate the amount of time that they have available and manage that?
Right. It's a very important part of our planning process, and it varies, obviously, from company to company. We always like to take into consideration what the current roles are of the people that need to be involved in the project on every level, and also we like to factor in any business contingencies. You know, they're planning an acquisition that's going to require, you know, extra time from all these people. How does that affect the overall plan? But by and large, we will need at least a heavy commitment from one internal person function as the internal project manager. Mm-hmm. That's sort of one of gatekeeper for all the things that are going on in the project. We will also need a fair amount of time commitment from those folks who are the decision makers and the ones who know each area of the business and their department the best.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think we need a fair amount of commitment from every level of the business.
Sure, yeah. Particularly with the types of projects that you have, it's tough to do it completely on your own, so you do need their involvement. Let's talk about the training aspect a little bit. You talked a little bit about it in terms of the implementation and deployment plan. So ways you train people initially, and then and how do you account for continuous training? You know, once you're up and running, right, employed, how do you guys help with
that? Right. So, of course, you know, training, you know, the project won't succeed if people don't know how to use it. The training begins really at, towards the beginning of the project. We have to educate the project team itself, and they're going to be called upon to make decisions. They're going to be called upon to look at the way their business will have to, you know, will run on the new system, and they'll have to have, you know, a decent background in what the capability is. So we do training at that level. It's a higher level training, not focused on, you know, how to post a batch. It's more focused on the higher level of, you know, functioning of the system. Then when we get to the user training in the deployment phase, we do a very tailored training. If the training is sort of generic scripted training, it's not, chances are it's not going to be the most effective for that particular client. And we try to keep the agenda, you know, do it in small chunks. Don't do too big a group. It's important that it's hands-on. And so we do that. And then we always recommend having, you know, customized training guide. And then for continuous training, you know, we think that, you know, it's very helpful for, you know, for folks to periodically do some refresher training, even if they've been on the system. They may start doing something, develop certain habits, doing things a certain way, you know, and then after over time they forget why they were doing that and what the other ways to do things are. But for general sort of continuous training, we often use a train-the-trainer approach with subject matter and system experts who can take on a training role for new people. And then along with the training guides, we also have produced other tools that people can use, like quick cards and things that just people, you know, stay on top of the, you know, which where to point and click, basically.
Right. I think that's one of the things we've learned as well, that you have to provide a variety of options because people consume information and learn differently, right? So, yeah, I think that's the key. So some people love to read guides still. We see that some people like video or some people just want conversations. So it's good to know that you're addressing those. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how differently different people learn. But, I, you know, by and large, the training itself, you know, people don't really learn it until they use it. So,
yeah, that makes perfect sense. You mentioned earlier, you talked a little bit about integrations at the beginning when you were describing some of the services you provide. Are you seeing more requests for those? They're becoming more important as technology takes on a larger role?
Yes, I think they're absolutely critical with the number of different types of applications that are being developed now. You know, there are some software vendors who are providing or kind of building that single stack to provide everything in a one-stop shop. But in general, there's, to have best-of-breed solutions in different areas, you really need to be able to select the right application for the right function and be able to integrate them. There's some challenges with that, of course. Sometimes now that everything tends to be cloud-based, and it's also becoming. I think the integrations are becoming more capable because of than just building out APIs and so on.
Yeah, I think that sort of transitions into another question I have, which was the impact of things like modern, particularly with the newer software applications where they're mobile, they're cloud-based. There's a social component to them. So in addition to the impact on integrations, any of the things you see in terms of the work that you're doing where there's an impact of those?
Yeah, I guess the biggest impact for us, and you certainly see that, you know, real estate has been traditionally very slow to embrace technology. And so sometimes over the 15 years or so that we've been, that Redirect's been around, it's not always been clear to our, you know, to the stakeholders and our clients why they need to do an implementation or adopt new software or new technology. That's changing, and I think that's beginning to change at an accelerating rate. And I think it has to do in part with the younger generation in leadership positions in these companies, but possibly more so to the fact that everybody has connected social media, personal experience, consumer experience. And so now they're getting a comfort level with that they didn't have before. I think it used to be especially I think probably mostly in New York, a big point of contention when you talk to a real estate owner about, hosting their database anywhere but their site. There was a level of, not wanting to trust another provider to host their database. All that kind of thing is changing, I think, largely due to the fact that we all have, we all walk around with smartphones and every manner of applications on it for everything we do.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense, and certainly it's something that we see quite a bit of as well. Great. Well, Bill, this is, I think you provided the audience with a tremendous amount of things to think about and some good guidelines. And maybe in conclusion, you can summarize those in kind of five key takeaways or 3 to 5 takeaways that you would advise any commercial real estate executive or organization to think about with regards to deployment and implementation issues and things that they should think.
Okay, that's great. I don't know if it's exactly five, but I guess the first thing I would say, go back to what I started with, which again may seem self-serving, but I think it's good advice, is to bring consultants in early. It's probably best to do it if you're doing a software selection. It's probably best to have a consultant with you through that process. If you know the software already, bring the consultant in, before the vendor or, in conjunction with, during the time you're working out the deal with the vendor. The consultant, first of all, can help you understand what's being proposed by the vendor. And very often we find that we can help clients, get the best deal for themselves. Then, another thing that is really important is education. Get to know what your needs are, get to know your business. Sometimes, we go in to do some initial requirements gathering, and, some fairly basic questions. People don't really have the answers at their fingertips about their own business and how things run. So get that clear, get some clarity around what your needs are. Why are you changing software systems? What's driving that change? And then I would say a great way to get educated is through conferences. Go to the conferences, go to RealComp, go to CFO forums, software vendor events. There are all kinds of networking events and user groups. LinkedIn groups are very good. I don't underestimate social media as a source for getting information. That's where you get, the consumer view of what really works. Don't rely on vendor demos a lot.
That was great. I think and terrific advice. And thank you again for all of the great insights. I think you provided a lot of things that people don't, as I mentioned at the beginning, consider as part of the overall evaluation process. It seems to be an afterthought in many cases. So I think getting ahead of this is really important for any company considering a new technology, new platform. And again, you're a great resource for those folks as well. So contact information for Bill and Redirect Consulting will be available on our podcast page. I encourage you to reach out to him with any questions you might have. We have a long-standing relationship and experience working with Redirect. Terrific company, great group of people. And I encourage you, if you do have questions, particularly for large-scale deployments, but anything you might be thinking about, to reach out to them. I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of CRE Tech Talks. I hope you continue to listen in. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this broadcast of CRE Tech Talks. We hope you found today's session valuable. Remember to visit our podcast page at www.buildingengines.com/CRE Tech Talks to download today's transcript and key takeaways, as well as listen to other sessions and share with colleagues. We'll see you next time on CRE Tech Talks.